Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
It's good to be back with you guys. Hope you're having a good day. Praise the Lord for that. And like I mentioned yesterday, I had a chance this morning to talk to Congressman Mike Johnson, who is the happens to be a good friend of mine and incredibly godly guy. Used to be one of the lead attorneys with Alliance Defending Freedom from Louisiana. He's probably the number one foremost expert on religious freedom in Congress, in the House of Representatives. And I had a chance to spend about 15 minutes on the phone with him early this morning. And I'm going to get to that interview on Friday. So we'll re-pick up that conversation on the so-called Equality Act that passed out of the House last Friday, which would be an absolute nightmare, the number one attack against religious liberty, I think, in the history of the country. So that did happen this morning. We'll bring that back around on Friday. Tomorrow on Theology Thursday, incredible story. The McKinnon family, which they're here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he's a part, Steve will be on the show tomorrow. The dad, he's a part of Southeastern Baptist, and tomorrow, it's going to be a very personal show tomorrow for him. One of his sons, Harrison, has been battling a life-threatening illness for years now, and it's just an amazing story of what God has done in their life. And an encouragement to those of you, any of us, that have struggled with that kind of situation. If you've been down that road, or maybe you're on that road now, tomorrow, or you know somebody that's been down that road, then tomorrow will be really important. Today, a man of much talent, many things to say, and a lot of kids. My good friend Steve Lewis from LNA Capital Advisors.
Here we go. Here we go.
And I always kind of open with that because Steve and his awesome wife Thea have 12 children, 10 that she gave birth to, and 2 that they adopted from Ethiopia. Steve Lewis, how are you, buddy? Welcome back.
Great. I have a question. How come the picture on the poster looks better looking than you in person? Yeah.
Well, because that's why we use graphic imaging. That's why we hire people. That's why we have filters on Instagram and Facebook and every other thing on your phone.
You used a lot of filters on that photo.
Yes, a lot. Thank you very much. That means almost nothing coming from you, but I appreciate it. Anyway, Steve and I go back a long ways, and we met on radio. He was doing a thing on the Truth Radio Network. Were you doing Saturdays when I was on
Saturdays? The Financial Greenhouse Show.
The Financial Greenhouse Show. That was a while ago. And then for a while, Steve and I did some Money Monday stuff together. And he's on every once in a while. And
then you kicked me off.
Then I kicked him off because, well, you know, blood and money and water and family. And
you don't do business with friends or family. That's how it works.
You don't? You manage our finances, so I don't know.
What do you think that tells you
about that?
What do you think that tells you?
I don't know.
Figure it out.
I think things are going
okay. Figure it out.
Steve is brilliant, does a great job, and we appreciate him. Steve comes at the financial markets as somebody that deals with the stock market specifically, electronic traded funds, things like that. So he brings a different perspective to the table than our friend David Fisher does, and so that's why we kind of have both of these sides here whenever we can, because it's effective. It's helpful. We all need more education so that we can be better stewards. And so, plus Steve and I go back a long way and we have a pretty loosey-goosey relationship. So it's a little more sophomoric because of our immaturity, even though we have a lot of important things to talk about today, but it's fun.
I think if you had my wife sitting at this table,
it would be
a different show.
That would be a different show altogether. That would be the Howard Stern show.
Although, you know, you should have a show on adoption and things like that.
I agree.
That would be different.
I would love to do a show on adoption and having a large family.
And having 6 children at home through home birth.
Yes.
That would be an interesting.
Whoa. Yeah. You got that whole thing going on.
Absolutely.
There. Which is, all right. So we'll line that up. That would be great. I would appreciate that. By the way, it's funny. You mentioned Jeff Jones, your pastor at Hilltop Baptist Church, right here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area.
Deep
and all
way
of a sudden,
Verena,
poof, Jeff shows up on Facebook Live. So what do you think's up with that?
Is he listening?
He is. He's looking. He's like right there. Well, I am listening today, and here I am coming up in the discussion.
Okay, so if he didn't hear it, that you're going to reach out to him for lunch.
Correct.
Okay.
Because I've got room in my heart
now
for
everybody's
free will
hearing
practice.
It. Everybody's hearing it.
Right, everybody's hearing it. So, and that was predestined to happen, so it's going to happen anyway. So,
I'm sure he...
Yeah, well, I'm all about the laughs. Anyway, all right, set aside all the good fun stuff. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's start with 2019 has been a very different year than 2018. We had the Trump bump.
Well,
2018 was crazy. And 2019, I mean, up until recently, I mean, up. I was just looking at year-to-date numbers, but we have a lot of volatility, which actually isn't based on tangible stuff. So let's talk about that first. What's going on with 2019?
Well, I think you could even go back to 17 and say it was very emotional. Right? It was very subjective.
Well, that was the Trump bump thing.
Everybody
right?
was excited. You had the lower marginal tax rates and lower cap gains. Everything went down. People saw opportunity and everything took off. Everybody felt optimism.
Oh,
right?
It was crazy.
And then the following year, someone decided to slow it all down. It's called the Federal Reserve. And they had, you know, four unnecessary rate increases. I mean, there was not one pundit in my line of work, whether it be on Squawk, on CNBC, that agreed with any of those things, especially Cramer. And I thought that was, following the fourth increase in December, it was 2 weeks later when the chairman said, you know, it's slowing down. Really?
Yeah, no kidding.
So why did we do that? So, yeah, so subjectively, people were reacting to that. This year, it came right back. I'm almost like to the calendar day, which I'm glad we are going in at stop. We go in at stop, too. Stop price, I won't go into the weeds on that, but I think we hit the sectors right on target. And because we were in such a high position of cash last year in the accounts, up to as much as 54%.
Which is pretty abnormal in your business to have a significant cash position, because most stockbrokers, people like that, don't want to have big cash positions because they don't make any money when my money's sitting in cash.
Well, you know, it was very difficult last year in that the fundamentals were so strong. And so we had many, many calls with clients, many, many, many calls, just under 100 recorded calls to where we would ask them, hey, what do you want to do? The fundamentals are there. And so they you know, pretty much said, let's hang in there because the fundamentals are strong.
Yeah.
Well, the algorithms that we have, or any algorithm that you set, they don't read Trump's tweets.
Right, exactly.
I mean, they don't watch CNN. They just give us data. So, you know, we did a lot of overriding those predetermined
sell
prices.
So you can have two very different worlds. Fundamentals, the basics of these businesses, they have strong sales, they've got good profit coming in, and those are fundamentals. Things look fine there.
Right.
But in the emotional world, that stuff gets chucked, and it's Trump tweeting and whatever's going on in the media and this whole emotional roller coaster, mm-hmm. and the market reacts to that.
It really does. And then, so it took off real, real strong. You know, February's beaten March. Our February's beaten January. March is has ahead of February. April has ahead of March. May went ahead of, you know, April maybe.
Yeah.
We're not quite sure yet. I doubt it. But then Trump starts to tweet even before the meeting with the Chinese.
Right. Yeah.
And then the volatility
begins. The volatility begins again. I'm looking at that on January 1st, January 2nd at 23.346, and then today at 25.776. And pretty much up until the last month. And then you've got this volatility again. And we're going to go more into that. What's going on with the tariffs in China? When we dare you to. Welcome back at Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here with Steve Lewis from LNA Capital Advisors, good dear friend of mine, and just brilliant when we're dealing with market conditions, what's going on in the stock market, electronically traded funds, all the kind of ins and outs half the time. When Steve is speaking his natural language, I have to slow him down because he's just buried in this all the time, but it really, really helpful and just brings great education and great help to the show. Today, talking about what's going on in the market, 2018 versus 2019, we're going to look at the tariffs, what's going on with China, what's happening in the tech world as a result of that, and also sentimentality, which is kind of a subject that's going to flow through most of this. Because the stock market, you can look at the basics and the fundamentals and say, all these companies look like they're doing great. Sales are up, profits up. But then that doesn't affect necessarily the sentimentality of the marketplace. So Trump tweets, says something about China. China says something back. It has nothing to do with the market fundamental, yet the market reacts. So it's a really wild environment to be in. And that's why we all need all the help we can get, which is why Steve Lewis is in here with us today. Again, LNA Capital Advisors, the website, lacapitaladvisors.com. And I just put that up on Facebook as well. So back to the whole talk of sentimentality and what's going on in the market with 2019 versus 2018. And it was up. But in the last month, is it just sentimentality where we're getting volatility again?
Well, the word tariff creates a political discussion. And something Bruce spoke a couple of days ago, and that is that the United States is lifting its tariff on industrial metals from Mexico and Canada. And what happened on that is that the bargain calls for Mexico and Canada to adopt tough new monitoring and enforcement measures to prevent subsidized Chinese steel from being shipped into the United States via their territory.
Oh, here we are again with China.
So in return, the United States will lift its tariff in 48 hours with Mexico, as long as they don't, and aren't, Mexico will not accept it from China and send it.
So kind of an attack on China by
Correct.
Way of Mexico.
Because yesterday, all the steel companies, STLD, all of them fell yesterday in lieu of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Trump does stuff like this, it's good for the country, but people, it's almost like getting hit from behind. You weren't expecting it.
Yeah.
And
because tariffs eventually, when they're implemented,
right,
sentimentality reacts to the tariff as soon as the tweet comes out.
Correct.
Right? The market reacts, even though the tariff hasn't been put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Once the tariff gets put in place, then you actually can have, based on the products for goods bought and sold, then you can have real reaction, real pocketbook reaction for the average American or manufacturers or farmers or whatever.
Sure. But I know CNN had a couple soybean farmers on there, and they didn't answer the questions the way CNN wanted them to answer. You know, they don't want to get the haircut on the tariff adaptions, but they realize that it's good. But, you know, there's
they just wanted him to say Trump stinks.
Sure.
He's hosing us.
But there's more to that agreement why he walked away. And there's 6 points here. One was to end forced technology transfer policies whereby United States companies that want to set up in China end up needing to hand over some technology, or i.e. intellectual property, to Chinese stakeholders. So they wanted that. Bolton wanted that off the table. Chinese did not agree to that.
So, intellectual property, we hear about this all the time. Can you take a minute and just explain how this is factored into our relationship with China? What does China do
They
copy it.
Right.
So they say, you can manufacture your stuff here.
Correct.
But we need to see the intellectual property. Then they just copy it
right.
and make their own
right.
and become
Correct.
The biggest competitor for the Correct. Person that's trying to go into China.
Correct. Number two, end policies that force American companies that want to set up shop in China to structure their Chinese businesses as joint ventures with Chinese-owned companies. Number three, crack down on industrial espionage against American firms. See, I haven't mentioned tariff yet.
Right.
Number four, halt its policies in subsidizing domestic companies that operate in strategic high-tech sectors, such as cyber protection, that China wants to dominate. Number five, reduce various barriers to American agricultural exports. And number six, commit to reduce the large bilateral trade deficit. It just wasn't tariff.
Yeah.
This is really what made them walk away from this. They did not agree to these.
They did not agree to these.
Right. Because Chinese, their R&D is zero. They just copy what we have.
Right, right. Yeah. And such an important point.
Correct. So you know, in short, the market reacts in that way. But the market reacts to human beings, right? You have the business industry, you know, the business trading and the institutional trades. Two different sectors, the brokerage side, retail side, and the institutional investors are two different animals. So we track that more than anything else. Where's the volume coming from, up or down? And so we're institutional on our side. Our clients are institutional. So we really more or less agree, you know, go into that. The broker will say, hey, gosh, look at the market falling. This is a great time to buy. We'd say, no, it isn't. Not until you can tell me what low is.
Right, right, exactly.
Right? So people will buy on limit, called buying low, selling high. They'll buy on a limit order if they can determine what low is. We'd rather buy on the stop when it starts trending up.
Right.
So exactly. There's proof.
Makes sense.
It's like nobody bet on Secretariat in his very first horse race.
Yeah.
He didn't win.
Right. That's right.
You know, but when he got into the Triple Crown side, he started to win and started betting on him. We look at the stock as Secretariat in terms of its trending point.
Yeah, that's a great point. So for a lot of people, as we look at this, I mean, from your perspective as a guy, an investment advisor, what do you think of just from your perspective? Forget an American perspective, but just as an investment person. What do you think about Trump and the tariff back and forth with China? Is he doing the right thing?
I didn't like when he was giving his viewpoints or what he thought was going to happen a week before they had the meeting. That threw the
market. Because the market gets thrown by that.
The market got thrown by it. And then it
don't you think, and my Uber Trump friends are not going to like this. I think he likes, I think he gets his jollies off having that kind of power. I think he enjoys watching the whole world react to something that he does. You know, and I support him in many ways and as often as I can, but I also think the guy's an egomaniac, and I think that's actually part of it. If that happens, he's like, yeah, see what I can do.
Well, he tweeted on Friday that I had a good conversation with the premier after the meeting.
And plus, isn't he,
the market went back up.
Plus, he's playing the game with Xi, President Xi, mm-hmm. and China in general, because he's negotiating all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When he walked out of the room today with Nancy Pelosi and those guys, that was a negotiation tactic. People are sitting there going, oh, he must have been really ticked off that he walked out of the room because they wanted to talk about Russian investigation. It's just him playing the game. He's always playing a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. Maybe I'm just Mr. Cynical. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, he's saying stuff that we probably would have done too. If I said something bad about you personally, and we're going to have a meeting in 15 minutes.
Right, that's going to factor into the meeting.
Would you be distracted sitting down with me and talking about something not related to what I just criticized you on?
I don't know. Generally, I don't pay a lot of attention to what you have to say about me. I caught you off.
It can't be repeated on the radio.
Can't be repeated on the radio. So as we look at this, how do we deal with this? Just regular person out here, loves the Lord. We're trying to provide for our future. We're trying to have some stability. We're trying to manage our assets well. How do we play, quote unquote, this game when there's all these other factors happening at the same time?
In the market?
Yeah.
Everybody, there's a class I took in graduate school. It was called Investment Behavior or Behavior Finance. And I thought it was going to be a coffee drinking session, and it really was. But it's been the most important part of the practice. Everybody comes to you with a story, with a history, right, with a past.
Right.
Maybe they're a widow or a widower, and now they're carrying this decision and everything else. And really, last year was really a rough time for my staff because of what we described, right? Fundamentals were great, but boy, the large swings.
Yeah, but the market was crazy.
You call that standard deviation, and then, it's really the variance squared, right? And you get the number. And it just threw so many things around, and the algorithms were confused as much as we were.
Yeah, scary. And that's when you just
Because if you sell too early,
right,
in a good market, there's nothing to recapture it.
Right, right.
So you have to be careful with it.
You just lose. We're going to talk about an example of what's going on in the market with a tech firm, a chip firm out of China called Huawei. We're going to talk about that. It's a really good example of what's happening. And then we're going to end up talking about the different sectors in the economy and what's going there so we can be smart. We'll be right back. Back at Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you, talking to my friend Steve Lewis today from LNA Capital Advisors. All kinds of market stuff going on, and a slightly different approach that we take when Steve is here than when we're talking to our buddy David Fisher, who's kind of coming at it from the precious metals banking investment side and looking at the overall picture and what's going on in a 12 to 18 month window. Steve is an investment advisor, really focusing on conditions today and dealing with stocks. And electronically traded funds, things like that. So we bring in different perspectives so that we can appropriately deal
exchange
with it.
Traded funds.
Exchange traded funds. Why do I keep saying that? That's because I'm not you and you're not me. That's your job to correct me. It's my job to kind of set things up, right, and make you look good. A lot of no comment moments when
I'm reading.
Steve Lewis,
I'd rather be reading right now.
LACapitalAdvisors.com is his website, by the way. LACapitalAdvisors.com. If you want to talk to Steve, who I can recommend personally, because between Steve and David, they helped the Noble family, been a great blessing. But if you want to get some education information for yourself, LACapitalAdvisors.com or their phone number here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area, but you can call it from wherever because we don't care about long distance anymore in the modern world. 919-573-6052, or just give old Steve-O an email, slewis@lacapitaladvisors.com. Okay, so let's talk about this interesting company, Huawei. And
Huawei.
They're a good example of what's going on in the sentimentality and the trade war and the tariff thing with China. What happened with Huawei? Because we have to really understand how this stuff is going down.
3 points. Shares of the chip suppliers are under pressure after the Trump administration's restrictions on doing business with Huawei. 2, Google has suspended business activity with the Chinese giant. Other Huawei suppliers, including Qualcomm, Broadcom, and Intel,
which are all big,
reportedly told employees they will not sell to the Chinese firm until further notice. All back to the intellectual property thing we discussed earlier. United States chip suppliers are losing a big customer, and Huawei purchases $20 billion of semiconductors each year, according to an Evercore estimate.
So we're playing some high-stakes poker here.
Qualcomm dropped 6% yesterday.
Man.
Shares of Analog Devices, Broadcom, and Advanced Micro Devices are all under pressure following the Huawei ban. The VanEck sector's ETF fell 4% on Monday, nearly 15% below its intraday all-time high.
That's in a very short period of time that all that happened.
Well, there was a moving average. The 14-day moving average in that sector has been flat anyway. There's been mixed earnings on both sides. And we mentioned back in February that You know, Yardini and other research firms recategorized some of these called the FANG stocks, right? Facebook, Amazon, Netflix.
Came up with a whole new
Google.
Category.
Yeah, they called FANG, and they moved them into consumer discretionary, consumer staples, defensive, and technology. They kind of moved them around, which... You know, which messed up a lot of the lot of the research stuff because all the software had to come up and recalibrate all those same things.
Yeah, pull them all out and put them in a different bucket.
Yeah, and of course the ETF companies were not happy. So, but that's, you know, that's what's called balancing because the communications sector, the telecom, grabbed one of those FANG guys. And now, because telecom's been in the toilet really for 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And now it's one of the, it's a positive sector right now.
Now, what helped them?
Grabbing, I think they grabbed Facebook.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Because Facebook is essentially this massive communications company.
That's pretty much how they decided to classify them.
Yeah. And so that pumps up the numbers in the communications sector.
Sure. They don't sell anything like
that. By the
Amazon.
Way, on Facebook, do you think the federal government should break up Facebook? There's a gathering storm
on the privacy going on there. Stuff, I was shocked at that. Mr. Zuckerberg had no clue, or the CEO, Sandberg, had any idea about the privacy violations that were taking place.
Huh.
I was shocked that they didn't know anything. Oh, we're hey, really? I was shocked.
Do you think they could be that far removed?
As
or they
far
just
as the live Facebook stuff, you know, the shooting that took place.
Yeah,
This show was just as bad.
That's a ridiculous statement. the fact that could happen.
Yes.
A guy goes live. The guy in New Zealand did that.
Yep.
And he's basically got a I don't know if he's using a cell phone or if he had like a chess thing. But he goes live on there and we couldn't stop it in time. I mean,
I think there should be like just like there is on radio. I don't know if you have
a delay.
I don't know if you have a delay or not, but they should have a delay. Probably a 2 minute delay.
Yeah.
Maybe perhaps because that would allow oversight. Right?
Sure.
To see what's going on some of these things.
Yeah, scary.
But as far as the speech goes, I mean, just...
Also scary.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're a private platform. You do not have to use Facebook. It's not like a free-to-air situation, radio, or even like regular television. And that's why, for example, that's why Howard Stern got off regular radio, because he got tired of dealing with the FCC. He wanted to say whatever he wants to say, which is... All the words you can't say on television and all the words you can't say on cable. That's why he went to Sirius Satellite Radio. You opt in, you pay to be a part of his channel, and he can drop the F-bomb 100 times an hour if he wants to. But you look at Facebook and freedom of speech, and you go, that's a private platform. It really is. We think it's public, but it's not. It's controlled by Facebook, mm-hmm. and you don't have to use it, right? You can avoid it if you want, which mm-hmm. for most of us would probably be smart, but... It's wild to watch this stuff. What about just the sectors in general? We often talk to Steve about the sectors. There's major sectors in the economy. You kind of break the economy down, the overall economy down into different buckets and track them that way. And then there's sectors within the sectors, within communication services or materials or IT. There's sectors inside of there. So help us understand what's going on there, especially this year.
Well, if you are a tactical investor and strategic, you want to be above the mean. You want to be above the index that they comprise, right? So the S&P is running at 13% as of yesterday.
Year-to-date.
Yes, year-to-date. Information technology is just about at 20. We have discretionary spending is second at 17. You know, that sector is really the engine of the economy. And it's growing. We haven't seen it this high since 2009.
Wow.
And portions of 2010. It's when people feel comfortable about going out on Friday, Saturday night and going to, Mason Jar restaurant.
Right. We're not sitting there thinking, man, we really got to tighten our belts.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to be careful here. You
things
know?
Are pretty good.
Correct.
Right now.
Correct.
So let's go and eat, drink, and be merry.
Absolutely. And then you do have the communication services, i.e., telecom at 17 as well. And then closely behind it is real estate. You know, those are the four that we're in. Real estate is doing really well on the REIT side, the real estate investment trust side. The dividend yields are tremendous, between 5 and 8 yield on a dividend as well. So there's a lot of ways you can play. And, you know, if anything did come good out of the 4 rate increases last year, it's our high-yield bond funds, high-yield closed-end funds. We're talking 5 to 8, 9% yield.
Yeah, that's crazy on a bond
and the
fund.
Return for the year on top of that is between 5 and 11%.
Hmm.
So you're getting the double hit on that.
Amazing.
And so it's a great place to park cash.
Why is healthcare in the tank this year? It's only up 2.
Well, healthcare membership, so to speak, is down. people are paying more for cash for their services because nothing got reformed.
Yeah.
The mandate went away, which is great. And so people are paying cash for stuff. So medical devices is what's pulling that sector down. All right. So there's a lot of industries in healthcare, right? Biotechnology is doing pretty good. Biotechnology is in the healthcare sector. Pharma is doing okay. But healthcare services, healthcare devices, those types of subcategories are what's pulling that sector down, which is sitting right about at 3%, 2% right now.
Yeah.
And it's come down.
Some people would look at materials. Okay, back to the S&P 500 year to date, up 13.3%. But materials only up 6.4%.
Correct.
So do we look at that and say that's the housing market's slowing, new starts are slowing? How do you kind of
there's a difference
that?
Between new starts and the real estate sector. Those are, you know, Pulte Homes, KB, all those guys are under the discretionary sector. It's not under real estate. So you have those types of sectors.
Is materials also manufacturing then?
Right. You have last year Whirlpool did tremendous in a year before. This year it's struggling. New housing starts is struggling a little bit. And home improvement's doing extremely well right now. So yeah, people are doing a lot of things to their home, different things like that. And rentals are up.
Rental income?
No, rental homes.
Just rental homes, period.
Are up too.
There's more of them out there.
Correct.
Is that what you mean?
Yes.
And why is that? People are moving out of apartments into rental homes, or what does that tell us?
Well, look at the apartments.
They're everywhere.
Market. And it is a growing, it's up 30% in 1 year in occupation. About 33% in 1 year.
Which is tied back into the overall strength of the economy.
Yeah.
For the time being.
Well, think about that. My daughter moved in a nice place, and I looked at a two-bedroom. I thought, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's nothing to worry about.
It's a nice way to live.
Huge community room with a beautiful gym, you know, with 24-hour Starbucks coffee. There's 6 TVs in there. There's conference rooms. You can do your work in there if you work from home, and you have a beautiful pool, and don't worry about air conditioning problems or
none of that
or
stuff.
Siding issues.
Yeah,
you just go
gone.
In there
right.
and write a check and leave. You know?
And depending on where you're living and what's going on with your tax status, all the bennies of owning a home aren't necessarily outweighing that anymore.
Not anymore.
I know a lot of people that are selling their homes and moving into apartments and townhomes.
Well, listen, the tax reform, you know, with the double deductions.
Yeah.
People, you know, the interest means nothing to write off because the double still exceeds what they can itemize on their Schedule A.
Right, right. The new standardized deduction is bigger. Correct. It's twice as big.
Correct.
So a lot of people are like, well, I don't need to write off
the
details.
Tax credit doubled.
Right. Yeah.
All those things.
So the other stuff might not make as much sense for a lot of people to buy a home as it does to live in an apartment. Talking to Steve Lewis, LNA Capital Advisors. We'll be right back. Because you want more. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. If you've never joined us in the studio for Facebook Live, you don't know what you're missing. Because when you're listening to a commercial break, and praise the Lord for commercials, and that's how a lot of things get paid for, and we appreciate that, obviously. But if you've never joined us on the Facebook Live page, just go to Facebook, which you're probably looking at already, truth be told, and just go to the Steve Noble Show, just in the search box. If you've never liked the page, go to the Steve Noble Show, and you can join us right here live in the studio, where my good friend Steve Lewis from LA Capital Advisors is making fun of some of my Star Wars things. So what's your problem with that? That's a bobblehead Star Wars guy.
It looks like you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Except this one has more hair.
Right. Thank you for that. So great to see you once a quarter, whatever it is. Anyway, it's great to have you in here, and I appreciate it. Catherine on Facebook Live had a general question. And actually, this is a great question for people on Christian radio and such, because the average age on Christian radio is usually in the 50s. And so people nearing retirement, some people in retirement, retirement advice or whatever you can call it legally and get away with legally, because I know you have to be careful about these things when you're on the air. But just some general notions about how to deal with your investments once you enter retirement, especially in the market that we're in recently.
I think I would seek a professional that's going to scrub your account at least every 30 days. Now, we're constantly scrubbing ours.
Now, what do you mean by scrub the account?
You need to find out, are all the players in there playing? Right. The typical asset allocation model, which is taught in all graduate schools and most of the asset allocation models, is that what that guarantees is that there's going to be a percentage not working. right? You'll see a percentage of emerging market positions.
You got some winners, you got some losers.
And one's designed to offset the other. Well, why? I mean, what we had in 17 was clear. You didn't need to have bond funds in a portfolio. It was too obvious where you could go and really do well.
Yeah.
So if the equity stocks, like total stock market, starts to fall, then you can fall back on the bond funds or vice versa. But when you have a bullish market, the bond funds are going to go flat or they're going to go down. You know, money moves in and out. It's going to go rob Peter to pay Paul. So I would find someone that does that. And so it's
because we've talked about this for years. The kind of our father's stock market, the days of buy 'em and hold 'em are kind of over.
Correct.
Because the market just is a different animal today than it was 30 years ago.
And I think also don't rely on charts that you're provided prospectus wise because they're not accurate. You know, market does not move in a linear fashion up and down. It doesn't. It falls linearly, but it does not rise. It moves logarithmically up, right? Because you're dealing with less money. A 20% reduction requires almost a 25% return to get it back.
Wow.
So people who came out of 08 with a 38 to 42% reduction.
Loss.
It's well over almost double what you need to get back. And that takes a long time because people are gun shy to get back in, first of all. They're scared. And I would find people who really scrub that and make sure they are, using.
And that's the question. How often do you take a look at all of my holdings and put them all up for discussion?
Well, our holdings come up when the pre-market begins. So we get in there early. I can see them. I can pull them up anywhere. And we see every equity is looked at every day. First thing we look at is the pre-market, and then we look at the 5-day average to the index, then the 30-day, and then the directional indices, the volatility, which contribute to our algorithm. And that begins to tell us what it is. If we see a trend line going down, then we got to find in the reports and determine, is this falling because of earnings projections or actual earning reductions or reporting earnings and sales and so forth, or is it just a trend line? Because of something that Trump said or something that is coming up with forecasted.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be determined, you know. So it's, everything's looked at in our 162 accounts that
we have. Right now. So you got to be paying attention to this stuff often. And then is the general notion that you get less aggressive as you get older, does that still apply?
If it's actively and strategically traded, it doesn't matter. I know target funds work that way in 401ks. As you get older, it's going to have a more of a bond feel to it. But you know, if that was the case, you know, a bond fund portfolios in 2009 returned about 29%. So the younger person would have lost out on a higher equity position than a bond fund position in 2009 and 10.
Which is abnormal.
It was ridiculous. So I think if you move with the volume, you have to interview people, making sure they're going to do that. Then I think you're doing just great. But you need a stopgap. You need to be able to say, okay, what's the environment have to look like for me to go into cash?
Because you have a lot of stop. Do you put a stop loss on everything?
Yes.
What is a stop loss, and why do you do that?
On lower beta, lower risk.
What is that?
What?
Lower beta.
Beta is a market risk term. Market's always at 1.00. So if I have a beta of 1.42 on say IBM, then that's carrying 42% more risk.
Okay, got
it. If it's carrying 85.85, then I'm 15% less
risky.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
So on lower beta positions, no, because we want that dividend, and they're not going to move as much anyway. But anything with a beta of 0.8 or higher, we do put a stop price on those.
And the stop price is what? That says, by definition,
it's a predetermined sell price.
So if I buy it at 20, you might have a stop at 18. Just to throw numbers around.
Yes.
So if it comes down and hits 18, automatically, no emotion, no decision making, no prayer, it just sells.
It sells at market open.
Yeah.
Now, that 20.
Now, there's a big difference here because a lot of people use mutual funds. And if all of a sudden we hit a big drop one day, which you see in the futures overnight.
I know where you're going. Let me answer the first.
Okay. All right.
So if we put a stop price of $18 a share on something that's selling for 20 the day before, but pre-market or after hours or a weekend, right, when the futures start, usually about noon on Sunday, that thing falls to 16, It opens at 15 at 9, then it's going to sell at 15.
Right.
You can't sell after.
You can't sell after hours.
Now, your mutual fund question is that, no, you can't put a stop price on a mutual fund. So if you put a sell order in it at 9:45, because things are looking bad.
Things are going south.
You've got to ride it for the rest of the day. And we don't like that because we want to get out, because I can take that cash and maybe put it someplace else quickly.
Or just get into cash.
Well, our goal is if we sell, we want to find someone that's paying what's called an ex-dividend or dividend soon, so we can get that dividend without having to earn it.
Why do most stockbrokers not want to put their clients in cash when things are hitting the fan?
They don't have the discretionary by law to do so. They have to, you know, get them to sign stuff, written authorization. And in most
is there also a disincentive there, because if your money's sitting in cash, they don't make money?
They don't get paid in cash, and they get paid on funds, usually in the fees of the funds, and they get commission on the trades. So if you buy a real estate investment trust, they're going to get about 3.5%. If you buy a closed end fund or something like that, they might make a master limited partnership. They love those. An MLP, they're going to get 7% commission on that.
Yeah, so a stockbroker is working kind of the backside of all those deals.
Right.
Whereas we're generally thinking of, well, I'm just buying something.
Right.
But stockbrokers can make money by you buying certain products.
Well, brokers will make more money than you in a down market because they're going to keep moving the money.
Right, because they're getting paid no matter what.
Right.
Just by moving money.
Right, and that's a question that people don't ask. They look at a diversified portfolio. Oh, yeah, I understand the broker's making a commission, but they don't ask how much. How much are these transactions going to cost me, and how much are they going to pay you?
Yeah.
That's a fair question to ask. You know, people are afraid to really challenge
them. Yeah, because it comes across like you're calling out the integrity of your broker. But it's your money, it's your future, and you need to be willing to ask tough questions.
Well, they're afraid to disrupt a potential relationship they've had for 5, 8, 10 years,
right.
or they go to the church with this person.
Right, yeah, difficult, very difficult.
And so it's a point where, you know, it's your money, it's your asset.
Sure.
And
you're not at the top of anybody's list other than your own. And I remind people that all the time.
Yeah, you should be.
You should be. Love your neighbor as yourself. But the reality is oftentimes, most often,
but, you know, back in 8, I have stories of people, they wanted to get out in 8, and they got a fight with the consultant from their firm.
That's just wrong.
And telling them that they're foolish to be doing it. It's everybody's losing. It's going to come back.
Now, in your world, your designation is different. So you act as a fiduciary. And I think it's important for people to understand this. I think this is one of the biggest distinctions that people need to understand when it comes to who's investing and managing your money. So what's the deal with a fiduciary, and why are you one?
The fiduciary is levied on professions such as a CPA and an attorney. You have to act in your best interest.
If there's client's best interest.
If there's a conflict of interest, you need to disclose it. It's not unlawful to have a conflict. Just disclose it.
Yeah.
And let the client decide from there. There's a lot of investment advisors out there, but even they have to be challenged because a lot of them working with third party money managers from St. Louis. I know a lot of third party money manager firms, and that advisor sitting across the desk makes no decision on that portfolio, but they're making a 1% fee. And then the other 50 basis points goes to the money manager. And so I know a lot of investment advisors who couldn't define beta, who couldn't define variance, who couldn't define standard deviation, but they sit across. They're an asset gatherer.
Yeah.
So you want an asset manager, not an asset gatherer.
Right. Got it. That makes a great point.
And that's most of them are out there. So you need to challenge that as well.
One other question that just came in on Facebook Live. I don't want to. Before we run out of time, he said, if we're possibly looking at another 2008 drop in the market next year, as is being predicted, what are good strategies now for a couple already in full retirement?
If those are investments in market-driven things that we just discussed, I would put a stop price on each equity that you have. And depending on the custodian, I know Ameritrade runs for 6 months.
Yeah.
And that way, if something happens, you can...
Yeah, so you kind of can do that.
Retain as many earnings as you can.
But if they're in mutual funds, they can't do that.
Unless they flip them into something that they can.
Yeah, because you cannot put a stop loss on a mutual fund. Just remember.
And an IRA, you can flip them really easy because everything's deferred.
Yeah.
So there'd be no capital gains by flipping them.
Such an important point. Steve, always great to have you in here. Thanks for coming in and helping us down these complicated roads. That's Steve Lewis, LA Capital Advisors.com. LA CapitalAdvisors.com. This is Steve Noble. Tomorrow, Theology Thursday, deeply personal show tomorrow for a father about his son who's been fighting for his life for years. Great, great conversation. Difficult one, but it'll be worth the time. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk soon. And like my dad always said, ever.